have it so much better than the Hebrews have it. I'm just saying, so much better. Oh, let us count the ways. I'm going to count them for you today. I'm going to count them for you today here on the Martin Zender Show. Where else do you get this stuff? With all the entertainment, all the sideshows, all the juggling, fire. I breathe fire here some days. And if you could only see me juggling my Bibles, my concordances, my commentaries, it's a spectacle. And right now, apparently, Clyde Lynn got a Washington Redskins calendar because I'm looking at a Washington Redskins calendar on the wall that wasn't here before the holidays. So that's a new thing here in Clyde Lynn's bedroom, which he thinks it's his bedroom. Actually, it's Martin Zender Studios. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender, and we're winding down Hebrews chapter 12. And I told you on Friday, I believe, that I'm going to tell you what does not apply to you in Hebrews, and I am. And it's a pleasure to do so, because some of you in the past have read the book of Hebrews and have been thrown off track. Paul's telling you all these wonderful blessings you have in Romans, for instance, and Ephesians, saved by grace apart from works of law. Now, in Hebrews, we're back in law. So it's a ping pong game. I'm saved by grace. No, and I have to go back and do law. Now I'm saved by grace. Now it's law. I wish I was in a stereo effect here. I'd be going grace over on this side, law over on this side. But no, in the letters of Paul, the 13 letters of Paul, it's all grace. In Hebrews, it's law. But it's a new law written on their hearts. So we're going to look at a three-part progression. It's only a two-part progression for the Israelites, for the Hebrews. But it's a three-part progression for you. That is, if you have in the past belonged to a church or subscribe to a teaching that put law first. And many of the churches that you used to go to or that your husband or wife might still go to promote the Ten Commandments. Can you believe the idiocy? They still think that the Ten Commandments are a viable means to godliness, that we're still supposed to do them. I'll never forget this is going to be a redundancy, stupid church sign. That's a redundancy. I apologize for that. All I need to say is church sign, and you will know it's stupid. This sign said, God gave 10 commandments, not 10 suggestions. This was in Willard, Ohio, at the Trinity Lutheran Church on the corner of Pearl and Myrtle Avenues, and I can't believe I still remember that, because that was probably 20 years ago. No, not probably, it was 25 years ago. And God gave 10 commandments, not 10 suggestions. As if to say, these aren't suggestions. You're supposed to do this stuff, people. It's not a theory. Do it. So I got so incensed that I knocked on the pastor's door one day. I made a videotape of this. Well, not of the actual thing. I reproduced it on one of my Crack of Dawn reports. What's it called? The Terrible Church Sign. Go to YouTube. Type in Martin Zender Terrible Church Sign. And I reenact this fateful day when I knocked on the door at the Trinity Lutheran Church on the corner of Myrtle and, did I say Pearl? I think it was Pearl Avenues, and confronted the pastor. I said, he says, I knocked on the door. The secretary was there. May I help you? Yes, you may. I'd like to talk to the pastor. Well, he's not in. Can I take a message? She changed her voice as I was speaking to her. And I said, no, I need to talk to the guy. Well, she knocked on his door, and he said, come on in. So I went in there and said, sir, I am a man of the scriptures. I'm studying the word of God. Very commendable. Thank you very much, sir. I have a problem with your church sign. Okay, what is it? It's very bad, I think I said, because, look, you're encouraging people to do law. What are people going to think when they go past this church sign and they see God gave 10 commandments, not 10 suggestions? I said, they're going to think that you're telling them to do law. He said, well, no, we're not really telling people to do law. I said, how aren't you? Well, our idea, see, is that they go try to do law, and then they find out that it's frustrating, it's the road's closed, the dead-end street, and then they turn to Christ. I said, well, you know, you need to add that to the church sign, because you're not saying all that. You're leaving it at, why can't you do law? These aren't suggestions, they're commands. Do them. It's like Israel was already experimented on. Let's say Israel already went through the law and for an example to us that no flesh at all shall be justified by law. And the law came for the recognition of sin, and that law actually increased sin. I told him all this. Romans 5:20. I had my ducks lined up. He didn't. He didn't know what he was talking about. Listen to his dodge. Listen to what this guy. Well, I just told you what he said. What a dodge. He said that he put that sign up there so that people would be driven to Christ. Oh, so great. So you're going to let these people think they can do law. So they're going to go 10 years, maybe hang themselves and get so frustrated. And then you're going to tell them, well, I'm glad my little experiment worked on you. I'm glad my little church sign helped you. 10 years practicing law just to find out that the law is not meant to work. I said, numbnuts. Just tell them that right away. Your church sign should say law doesn't work. Just say that and get the 10 years of experimentation over with. Tell them that we already experimented. Israel was the guinea pig nation and they failed miserably. They went through the trauma of finding this out so that we wouldn't have to, so that Paul could simply point to them. Point over to them and say, you see that group of people over there? Israel? God gave them the law to prove to all humanity that flesh and blood can't do the things of the law. Now, learn from that and never try it again. Instead, you, and I pointed to them like Moses pointed to the Israelites. I wish I had, but I didn't. You are trying to take them back on the route of Sinai, and you are dissembling, I think I said. I hope I said that. Did I say dissembling? I'll have to look that word up to make sure what it means. It was hocus pocus. The guy was caught. I caught him. I was the only guy with the guts enough. And really, I felt responsible. I felt responsible for the whole city of Willard. The poor people walking past here and being condemned. I said, you're condemning people one by one who walk past this idiotic church sign. Again, I wish I had said this stuff. You always think of this stuff later. I mean, I said the right things, but now I wish I had had a recorder. Here's a guy trained in whatever. What are the people called who run the Lutheran churches? I don't know. Numbnuts, yeah. Trained for years in a seminary, and he still thinks you're allowed to do law. The reason I'm quite animated about this today on this Monday is because of Hebrews 12. Listen to this. This is even the message to the Israelites who were initially given the law. Now they're finally learning the lesson of law. Remember what they said at the foot of Mount Sinai? All that the Lord has said, we will do. Even the women said it. All that the Lord said, we will do. And they failed miserably. So now even to them it is given the word, and here in Hebrews, of the new covenant. Now, here's the stuff that belongs to the old covenant that Christianity is still trying to promote and push with their stupid church signs. Ah, there's the redundancy again. Verse 18 of Hebrews 12. For you have not come to that which may be handled and burned with fire, and to murkiness and gloom and tornado and the blare of a trumpet. And the sound of declarations, which those who hear refuse, that no word be added to them, for they did not carry out the assignment. And if a wild beast should come in contact with the mountain, it shall be pelted with stones. And so fearful was the spectacle. Now, wait, all this, I got to tell you this. This whole description here is talking about the Mount Sinai that Moses encountered. That poor guy went up there. Do you know why he went up there? Because the Israelites said, you go talk to God. He's too scary for us. So Moses, being the one chosen by God to represent him, he scrambles up the mountain. I've climbed mountains in Colorado. And as I was climbing the last 300 yards of Pike's Peak, it's a boulder field, I thought of Moses up there. I was up at the 14,000 feet, and I think actually Mount Sinai is not quite that high, but I was climbing up there thinking of Moses. Now, the weather was decent for me on Pike's Peak, but Moses went up there in gloom. Listen to this. This is not your gospel. Murkiness, gloom, tornado, the blare of trumpet, the sound of declarations. Moses was hearing stuff up there. Can you imagine going to the top of a mountain in a storm and hearing voices? Hey, Moses. That's what he heard. He heard people talking to him, angels singing, and it was scary as heck, and yet he went up there. And the problem was that those who heard this stuff, they refused it. They did not carry out the assignment. And while he was up there, the people said, when he came down with the tablets, the people said, all that God said we will do. Yeah, right. Right. You didn't. You can't. You couldn't. And neither can we, and neither are we supposed to. That's the privilege we have. I'll be getting to that here. in the final 3 minutes of this broadcast. And if a wild beast should come in contact with the mountain, it shall be pelted with stones. That mountain, when Moses was on that, was so holy, nobody could touch it. Such was the majesty, the greatness, the awesomeness of God. And that was one of the reasons of the law, of the spectacle on Mount Sinai, was so that people would know how awesome this God was and what a privilege it was to be in his presence. And they were given all sorts of rules, regulations, and how to approach him and not make him mad. Because if you made him mad, as the beast found out that accidentally touched that mountain, you were pelted with stones. That's a nice way to put it. They threw rocks at you until you died. That's the Zender paraphrase. Now, I want to read A. Enoch here, and then I'm going to go back to the text. This is what A. Enoch says in his commentary. The nation in the wilderness at Mount Sinai came to the terrible spectacle. Listen to this. Terrible spectacle which inaugurated the law. You find this in Exodus 19, 12 through 20. The whole scene was prophetic of the relation they would sustain to Jehovah under the legal covenant. He forbade a near approach under pain of death. If anyone other than a priest went into that sanctuary, they died. If anyone other than a high priest went into the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement, they died. It brought no peace or assurance, but fear and terror. Fear and terror. The law, 2 Corinthians 3, I think this is a dispensation of condemnation and death. And yet this same law, the Ten Commandments, is promoted in churches today. Paul is not even promoting it here to the Hebrews, as I'm about to get to. No peace, no assurance, fear and terror. This is the function of the law, i.e. fear and terror. That's what it's supposed to inspire. It came not to bring them near to God, but to convict them of their inability and unworthiness. News alert to all the pastors and teachers out there who want to put the Ten Commandments on the walls of their church, who want to teach children the Ten Commandments at Bible school and summer Bible camp, give them cookies and teach them the Ten Commandments. It came not to bring them near to God, but to convict them of their inability and unworthiness. Now, knock again. He says there is a studied contrast here between the scene presented to the physical eye at Mount Sinai and the prospect of faith in connection with the new covenant. See, we're introducing a new way here, even for the Hebrews. So the Hebrews, now, here in the book of Hebrews, it's a progression from the scariness, the thunder, the lightnings, and the voices on Mount Sinai. Even for them, they're coming to the new covenant in which God puts his law in their hearts. And they're waiting for it, as we said in Hebrews 11. They're waiting for it. They can't do it. So a good Israelite, a smart Israelite, an astute Israelite will today realize that he or she cannot do the law that came from Mount Sinai, the law chiseled in stone. They've given up on it. They don't even have a temple. What they're doing is waiting for God to put the law on their hearts. And so the weird thing there is, that's an astute Hebrew. The weird thing there is Christians today who think they're Hebrews, they're assuming this mantle of the old law. They're going back to the Merkin. They haven't even come to Hebrews. They think they're Old Testament Israelites. They're not even New Covenant Israelites. They're Old Covenant Israelites. They're going back to the murkiness, going back to the voices, to the thunder, to the lightning. And they love it. They love it. But Paul's saying for the Hebrews, a new thing has come. And it doesn't have anything to do with the scariness. Because Enoch again, Mount Sinai itself is suggestive of another mountain, which is the ultimate home of Israel in the new earth. And in that mountain, on the new earth, the Lord is present as he was in the wilderness, but here he is light rather than lightning. Going to get to more of that, and then I'm going to tell you that not only does Israel progress from Old Covenant to New, which not even Christians today have done, but we, being members of the nations and not Israelites, we go one step further than any of this. And tomorrow I'm going to tell you about the step we take. Not only are we not in the thunder, not in the lightning, we're not even in the new covenant with this great mountain that's going to be on the new earth. We are in a completely different realm where condemnation is impossible, and it's among the celestials. See you back here tomorrow.